Earlier this month, in the midst of an emotional slump, I attended an event here at the church. About an hour in, I found myself so upset that I had to leave. Perhaps a couple of you noticed this. When my emotional resilience returned a couple of days later, I felt embarrassed that I'd been unable to stick it out here. I felt the temptation to be hard on myself for failing to show up as I believe leaders should. I failed to be a non-anxious presence. Fortunately, I had a kinder voice that encouraged me to embrace grace. And this is what I'd like to talk with you about today. Do you ever feel like you've failed yourself? Failed to live up to your own standards? Failed to live in accordance with your own values? Perhaps I'm wrong, but I believe this is at least partly the human condition. And many of us who are drawn to Unitarian Universalism do take things very seriously. So maybe we take ourselves and our failings a little too seriously, too. We just heard a few paragraphs from Catherine Schulz's TED Talk, in which she describes how rarely we have this experience of feeling wrong. Instead, she says, we typically shift our thinking so quickly that as soon as we realize we have been wrong, we now believe something so different that we are, in fact, no longer wrong. In her book, however, she has an entire chapter devoted to the experience of getting lost in wrongness. The experience of being wrong without that new belief that is right. To illustrate what it is like to be truly lost in wrongness, she tells the story of a young woman named Anita who leaves her Midwestern evangelical family and moves to New York City with her atheist boyfriend. They hang out with the atheists, and Anita leaves her evangelical roots in the dust until she and the boyfriend break up. When the relationship fell apart, the support structure that had made Anita's atheism both tenable and desirable collapsed as well, and took the belief system with it. By then, though, it was too late to return to the faith of her family. It had sprung too many holes, was too much at odds with both the world she saw around her and the voice she heard within her. 1,000 years before her birth, Persian philosopher Al-Ghazali meditated on precisely this problem. He's been called the Thomas Aquinas of Islam. Of the irreversibility of breaking with past beliefs, he wrote that when someone recognizes their former beliefs as false, the glass of their servile conformism is shattered, an irreparable fragmentation and a mess which cannot be mended by patching and piecing together. Instead, it can only be melted and newly reshaped. Raised to be afraid of a literal hell, Anita suddenly found herself in a figurative one instead. After the breakup, she said, I plummeted into a pit of awfulness. She no longer believed in her childhood religion, but she had no idea how to live without it, or what to believe instead. When I read this story, I found I could relate to Anita's pit of awfulness. Maybe you could too. Whether your experience of wrongness has been so short that you barely notice the shift, or has been more like a pit of awfulness, we know how horrible it feels to realize we've been wrong. Wrong to judge some group for its behavior or history. Wrong to judge people just because they are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. Wrong to merely stay in our privileged racial bubble. Some of us carry what I have heard called white liberal guilt. And yeah, it's probably deserved. I don't want it to be true, but I have to admit there's more I could do. Parts of my mind have been too closed, and I feel guilty about that. In fact, some of us come from traditions rich in guilt. How many of us were Catholic or Jewish or Baptist before we came here? Do you think we left all that guilt behind? I sometimes wonder. We have a new list of things we should do, and some of them are different from the old ones, but not all. Are we serving in some way at the church? Are we involved in social justice or our nation's democratic process? How's your stewardship? I suspect none of us really believe that we're off the hook for any of that, but sometimes we get stuck in feeling guilty instead of knowing how to get unstuck and move forward. As I reflected on what it might mean to move forward from guilt, I remembered my own experience of being lost in wrongness. Like Anita, I also experienced a spiritual crisis or emergency. I also began with evangelical roots, not just evangelical, but Southern Baptist. We were so sure that we were right. We believed not only was everyone else wrong, but needed to be convinced, needed to change their minds. I enjoyed my sense of being right well into college. I remember my first Sunday morning as a freshman insisting that my roommate get out of bed and go to church. This really happened. When she complained that she didn't have faith like mine, I told her she was lazy. That faith was a matter of following through on commitment, not just feeling it. Self-righteousness was my comfort zone. Not long after this, one of the guys from my church, someone I'd gone to high school with, crossed a line into Pentecostalism. I had a crush on him, so I followed. It was my first experience of walking away from the faith of my youth. Now, Pentecostalism intrigued me by offering a tantalizing second degree of chosenness, something called the baptism of the Holy Spirit. Now, this friend that I had a crush on was doing everything he could to get this blessing from God, which involved simply praying, asking God for the baptism of the Holy Spirit, and receiving the gift of speaking in tongues. He sought the blessing, he prayed for it, and he received. Now, up to this point, I had been getting just about all of my self-esteem from believing that I was one of the few people who had this whole God thing right. So when my friend came back with what I had come to believe was proof that he had been favored, I couldn't stand being left behind. I had to get the evidence that I was blessed too. So I sought the blessing. I prayed for it. And nothing happened. Now, things began moving very quickly then. I felt rejected, and along with this sense of rejection came a world of rage. I had devoted my life to following the rules, to doing what I was supposed to do, and God had denied me. Where was the justification for being good? Gone. I came this close to swearing. And I contemplated worse. But before the purity of my spirit was sullied, a little voice inside my brain started quoting me back to myself. Not too long before, I had said, faith is a matter of following through on commitment, not just feeling it. You're lazy. I might feel rejected, but that didn't matter. I knew what was right, I knew what I needed to do, and by God, I was going to do it. Every Bible study I could find, I attended. Every church service I could fit into my schedule, I attended. Every prayer group, and I witnessed my tail off. If I met somebody, they heard from me about Jesus. Aren't I the embodiment of the good news? You too can drive yourself into the ground with goodness. This didn't last long either. My worldview had already begun to fray and crack. Those little voices in my brain don't let me get away with much. Just a few days into this breakneck pace, I confronted myself again. My former belief that I was in the right because I believed the right stuff and did the right things had broken away. My mother's faith no longer had the power to save me. This isn't real, I told myself. I'm hiding from the truth. The truth I was hiding from was a whisper, a dreaded life sentence whisper. Hypocrite. When someone recognizes their former beliefs as false, the glass of their servile conformism is shattered, an irreparable fragmentation and a mess, which cannot be repaired by patching and piecing together. I stepped off the spiritual emotional roller coaster in the sub-basement of wrongness. Seeing in myself now the worst kind of human being, a hypocrite, reviled by faithful and faithless alike, I withdrew into my awfulness. But I only knew how to do what I had always done. So I kept showing up to church and to Bible studies and to prayer meetings. Only I remained silent, cautious, all the wind out of my sails. I was Wile E. Coyote in free fall. The next 3 weeks gave me my first serious encounter with depression. The pain refused to subside. In fact, it only increased. Showing up to all these faith-based social events only showed me how isolated I was. Finally, in desperation, I sought out help from someone I hoped might help, a young woman named Cheryl. She was the youth group leader at the Baptist church in my tiny college town. I told her the whole roller coaster story and my head-on collision with my own hypocrisy, and I braced for her judgment. And she said, "Oh, Amy, I have felt that way so many times." Okay, now nobody had ever said anything like that to me before. Cheryl unpacked for me then the concept of grace. It was a word I had heard at church many times before, but it had never been meaningful to me like this. Cheryl told me that God's grace means I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to be right. I don't even have to avoid being a hypocrite. I am God's child, no matter what contortions I might be bending myself into. I am in the family. I don't get to not be in the family just because I am freaking out in some way. I am God's child. There's no shaking it. Now, believe it or not, it is because of this experience that years later I became a Unitarian Universalist, because the concept of grace gave me the space I needed for a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. As I have reflected on my post-adolescent experience of wrongness and grace, I've wondered if there might be such a thing as liberal grace. In the Christian tradition, grace exists because of this blood sacrifice Jesus made on the cross. And I know any traditional Christian listening to this might wonder how liberal grace might work. Grace from whom? How? Well, I think we need it. We need grace somehow. Because if all we get is the guilt without the grace, man, that sucks. And it's pretty demotivating too. Because I don't think we can be effective in our showing up, effective in our willingness to participate or volunteer or organize, effective in our speaking up and our caring for the well-being of others if we are showing up out of guilt or going home to beat ourselves up for not having been good enough. In fact, if guilt is what really drives us to participate, I suspect that our participation will be short-lived and unstable. So, what might liberal grace look like? Well, I chose the image of a cat on a lap to symbolize grace for this service because that is, for me, a very tangible experience of grace. Doesn't any cat owner know that if you have a cat on your lap, you are excused from meeting almost anybody's needs, even your own? In fact, just this morning, I got out of the shower and I was leaving the bathroom and I called to my husband and said, "Okay, the bathroom's yours." And he said, "I've got a cat on my lap." When a cat decides to snuggle up with you, that is a special grace. You don't turn down grace, you accept it. And of course, there are times when even we who accept that special grace know that you just have to get up and do something, and we do. When I went searching for other possible definitions of liberal grace, because I guess not everybody's into cats, I immediately turned to my traditional to liberal Christianity translator, Paul Tillich. He suggested that the experience of grace is just acceptance that is beyond our understanding. "You are accepted," he wrote. "You are accepted. Accepted by that which is greater than you, in the name of which you do not know." We may be struck by grace, and if we are, perhaps we just accept it. So I wonder what would happen if we responded to our own and others' large and small failings with acceptance. Tara Brach is an author, psychologist, and teacher of Buddhist meditation. In her book, Radical Acceptance, a title that stood out to me after I read Paul Tillich's definition of grace, she says, "Radical acceptance means feeling sorrow and pain without resisting. It means feeling desire or dislike without judging ourselves or being driven to act on it." She describes it as accepting what is without judgment, accepting everything that is without judgment. And I think that is pretty radical. It challenges our puritanical work ethic to accept what is without judgment. Buddhist teacher Chogyam Trungpa offered us the idea of basic goodness in place of original sin. And one of his students, Pema Chodron, has called this positive groundlessness. She said, "You experience positive groundlessness when you really release your preferences, your wishes for how things should be, or how you should show up, or what someone else should do. When I consider this, it feels like nothing to hold on to." She offered an example of positive groundlessness from the days following 9/11. "I remember those days and how unlike any other they were. This was a time period in which we were faced with our lack of control, our common humanity, and our need. And the only thing that made sense was for us to be kind to one another." Pema said that that people do eventually feel a need to seek ground, and one of the ways we do this is by seeking the ground of being right. We release the groundlessness in which we acknowledge that we have no control, and instead we grasp for the control in self-righteousness. So one way I see this grasping show up is in a fear of grace. We are afraid of believing that we could be good, even if we did nothing. Because if that's true, why would we do anything? We think better to feel guilty because that keeps us involved. Well, maybe guilt can motivate us sometimes, but sometimes, at least with me, it leads to me shutting down and shutting out, or grasping for control in the form of self-righteousness, even around my new liberal values. So here is what I am practicing: noticing my self-righteousness or my guilt when it comes up, and recognizing that they are just about trying to control something and letting that go. This is what it would mean for me to have that sense of grace. If I can let that go, perhaps I can remember that we're all just people, all just doing the best we can. And I can simply approach you and myself with kindness. So I would love to learn from you. How are you giving yourself and others grace? Thank you.